This is special coverage on the novel coronavirus from North State Public Radio. I'm News Director Sarah Bohannon. Today we'll hear about Butte County's contact tracing and case investigation efforts, learning what exactly contact tracing is and why it's a critical component toward containing COVID-19. We'll also hear from Chico State President Gail Hutchinson about how this pandemic could affect things like funding and student enrollment at the university. If you have questions for us, let us know on our message line 433-9216 or go to our website, mynspr.org. For Thursday, May 28th, 2020, this is special coverage from North State Public Radio. First, some news.
For NSPR News, I'm Mark Albert. Cases of the novel coronavirus in California soared beyond 100,000 Thursday as 2,717 new cases were confirmed by the California Department of Public Health as leaders continue easing restrictions on gatherings and commerce. The total caseload in the state is now 101,697 as the number of infections continues to rise by 18% a week. Deaths are likely to hit the grim milestone of 4,000 on Friday after 89 deaths were reported and California's fatalities from the virus reached 3,973. Deaths are increasing at a rate of 12% a week, with 431 recorded since last Thursday. Cases also continue ratcheting higher in the North State. Five new cases were confirmed, lifting the total across the 11-county region to 187. New cases were confirmed in Glenn, Lassen, Shasta, and Yuba counties since Wednesday. According to local officials, 42 cases have now been identified in Sutter County, while positive cases in Butte County remain at 40. The number of cases in Shasta County rose to 37, Yuba County to 29, and in Glenn County to 14. A total of six cases have been found in Siskiyou County, five each in Colusa and Lassen counties, four each in Plumas and Tehama counties, and one lone case in Trinity County. Deaths from the virus remain at eight across the region. Lassen County will offer drive-through COVID-19 testing during the first 5 days of June at different locations. The testing site on June 1st is at the Lassen County Public Health Office at 1445 Paul Bunyan Drive in Susanville from 10 to 4. On the 2nd, it will be at the Doyle Senior Center from 11 to 1 and at the Fort Sage Unified School District in Hurlong from 3 to 7:30. On the 3rd, it will be at the Mountain Valley Health Clinic in Bieber from 10 to 3. On the 4th, at the Westwood Senior Citizens Club from 10 to 1. And on the 5th, back at the County Health Office in Susanville. Those wishing to be tested must schedule an appointment online at projectbaseline.com/study/COVID-19. A town gown meetup of officials to discuss the economic impact of COVID-19 on Chico was scheduled for Thursday evening using the online conferencing service Zoom. Among attendees, Gail Hutchinson, Chico State's president, Chico Vice Mayor Alex Brown, and Councilman Randall Stone. Nearly $100,000 in aid has been given to local organizations to ramp up coronavirus testing and provide personal protective equipment, food, books, and clothing to those made needy by the outbreak in Butte and surrounding counties. The money was raised from contributions and distributed by the North Valley Community Foundation. Funds helped Adventist Health purchase testing equipment and to other groups providing meals in Chico, Hamilton City, Magalia, and Oroville. For NSPR News, I'm Mark Albert.
This is special coverage on the novel coronavirus from North State Public Radio. I'm Sarah Bohannon. As known cases of COVID-19 continue to rise, work aimed at containing the spread of the virus has increasingly fallen upon teams of contact tracers. NSPR's Andre Bayek recently spoke with Monica Soderstrom, Butte County Public Health's Division Director of Community Health. Soderstrom leads the county's contact tracing and case investigation efforts. So one of the first things Andre asked was, what exactly is contact tracing?
Whenever a lab-confirmed positive case is reported to the health department, we begin with a case investigation where we receive medical records, we interview the patient, and when we're interviewing them, we determine their infectious period And then we work with them to identify those that had close contact with them during that infectious period, which could include the time before their symptoms were apparent. And so it make a list of the people that they have been in close contact with, meaning those that were within 6 feet for longer than 10 minutes of time. And then we reach out to those people to inform them that they have been a close contact of someone who has tested positive. And we inform them about measures that they need to take while in quarantine to help prevent the spread of the virus to others in their circle.
How long could that infectious period be? Or what's the typical infectious period?
So usually people become infectious 2 days before their symptom onset, and then it can range for 10 days minimum beyond the time their symptoms appeared. And so when we put someone in quarantine, we usually put them in quarantine for 14 days from their date of exposure. Because within that time frame, if they were going to develop the coronavirus and have symptoms, they would likely show up between 2 and 14 days after they've been exposed.
And when you do reach out to people who were possibly in contact with the patient, what measures are you advising them to take?
Well, number one, we would like them to stay home. People that are ill with the coronavirus are in isolation. And those who have been exposed as a contact are in quarantine. Or if there's someone who's at high risk, they can be in quarantine. But for those who have been exposed to someone, we'd like them to be at home for 14 days. We, of course, want them to be able to stay separate from most people if they can. They should be wearing a mask, even if they're around other people in their own home that maybe weren't a contact. Taking all the same measures that we take in the public as far as washing their hands and social distancing from others. We ask them not to go out in public unless they absolutely have to, and if so, like, maybe they were getting ill and they wanted to go see their doctor. We ask them to call their doctor ahead of time and let them know that they've been a close contact and wear a mask when they're going to see their own healthcare provider. We also ask them to monitor themselves for symptoms twice a day. We make sure that they have a thermometer to take their temperature. And we go over the different symptoms that they might see related to the virus. And then we have them on a text monitoring system that we enroll them in if they're able to text. And they let us know whether they're symptomatic or not. If they don't have the ability to text, then we make an arrangement for them to call us or we call them.
Have you gained any general insights into maybe the average number of people a typical COVID patient could have potentially exposed? Is it 2 or 3 people or more than that even?
So far, for the cases that we've had in Butte County, we've had an average of about 10 contacts per case. Sometimes those are contacts in the home. Sometimes they're contacts in their circle of friends or at their work. But typically, it's been about 10 contacts per lab-identified case.
That's interesting to me, too. Along those lines, have you gained any insights or information regarding the movement of maybe people in the county who have contracted the disease? Are they out and about, or is it they're going out for essential services and then going back home?
You know, it's been really interesting for us. I think the thing that's fascinating about case investigation and contact tracing, it's really detective work. And it's really looking for patterns. We have an epidemiologist in our department who helps to look at patterns. And what we're really seeing right now, especially since we've had our stage 2 reopening in Butte County, is it really is pretty widely present in our community. Initially with our cases, we could pinpoint pretty readily where they had been exposed, whether they had been a traveler or whether they knew they had been exposed at work from another positive case. It was a pretty direct link. And now we're finding people that are not really sure where they had come in contact with someone. They don't remember being around anyone who was ill. They don't know of anybody who had a positive case. So again, now it's what we really kind of expected with the reopening. And the reason we needed to increase our ability to respond quickly with containment measures, which is really case identification through more testing and then through contact tracing, was able to pinpoint as soon as we could who is testing positive, who their contacts are, and helping those contacts stay quarantined so that we can stop the spread of the virus in the community.
You mentioned people not being exactly sure where they were possibly exposed. Should people be keeping a mental log or even a physical log of where they've been in the past week or so to help investigators track down that information?
That is actually really helpful. Early on, we saw, you know, some people on social media saying, hey, I've learned about you can keep a daily diary of who you've seen and where you've been. And we've had a lot of really positive response for those that we've called to try to help us put the puzzle together for their particular situation.
Case investigations and the investigatory portion of your work, is that one and the same of contact tracing, or are there other tasks involved with investigating COVID-19 and exposure points?
Yeah, you know, we have a whole separate group of people. We have people that are doing case investigation, and then we have a team of people that are doing the contact tracing. And, you know, most of those people are people who have other jobs within public health, but they've been cross-trained in order to be contact tracers. Some of them are doing it full-time, and some of them are doing it part-time while they're still doing their other public health usual role. Our contact tracers have been trained not only by one of our local public health supervisors, but most of them now have taken an online virtual academy that's been offered by the state through the California Department of Public Health. So even if this wasn't their usual role in public health, they've received additional training in order to help them in this role.
Another topic I've been interested in is asymptomatic spread. People who are possibly spreading the virus but may not know it. Is your office seeing these types of cases? And if so, is it fewer than the symptomatic cases that you're seeing?
I couldn't give you a number right now, but we are seeing more asymptomatic people or people who thought, I thought I just had allergies. Or, you know, I don't really remember being sick, but they are now testing positive. So, you know, again, that is why we say it is in our community and people should not let their guard down. You know, wear your mask, wash your hands, use social distancing, and don't go out unnecessarily. Don't put yourself in situations where if you're the only person wearing a mask in a crowd, it's probably not a good place to be. Stay out of large crowds. And, you know, just really protect yourself while you're protecting your fellow community member.
I've also been interested in the level of cooperation that your team is seeing. Are the majority of patients speaking with contact tracers, giving them the information they're looking for, or are you running into some roadblocks?
You know, fortunately, we have a really close-knit community. I believe that, you know, unfortunately, after the campfire, we had a lot of people who really came together called Butte Strong, and I think that COVID is just another challenge that's facing our community, and thankfully people want to help. You know, they want to help their fellow Butte County resident, and we have had very good cooperation with those that we've identified as cases to help us, you know, really understand maybe, you know, who they've been in contact with or who maybe they had been in contact with themselves to be exposed. And we've been very grateful that our small community has been able to really, to this point, contain this very well. You know, many larger communities don't have the small town camaraderie that we have. So I think it's been a benefit for us and able to keep our numbers as low as we have been.
One thing I've personally been curious about is if you find a patient had visited, let's say, a grocery store during a certain amount of time, whether customers are able to be notified in any way, whether they were there at the time as a possible exposure and perhaps should quarantine themselves. Is any work like that being done, perhaps putting a flyer up on a store window or something like that, or is that not the case?
You know, that is very atypical for in a need for COVID, because unlike measles, where the virus is spread in the air and has an airborne transmission and hangs in the air for hours, COVID is a droplet transmission. And so that's, again, why you have to really be within 6 feet of someone for 10 minutes or longer to have a true risk of exposure. So the need to identify customers in a large setting is not the same as it would be, like, for instance, with measles. That's why the individual close contact tracing is so important with COVID, because it really is about distance and time.
Is there anything I didn't ask you that you'd like to share about the work you're doing regarding the pandemic that people should know?
Yeah, I would just like the public to know that as much as Butte County is doing to respond, you know, really strongly still with our containment measures, with investigation, with testing through our lab and encouraging testing through other labs, through our contact tracing, really still the answer to this is to try to maintain those measures that we all practiced before the reopening. That is really what stops COVID in its tracks. And until we have a vaccine, that is the thing that we can all do to really keep COVID at bay and keep the numbers low in our community.
That was Monica Soderstrom, Division Director of Community Health for the Butte County Public Health Department, who leads the county's contact tracing and case investigation efforts, speaking with NSPR's Andre Bayek. Before we take a break, I just wanted to say that I think this idea of keeping a daily sort of contact tracing log is really interesting and maybe really important, and for more than one reason. Yes, it would be helpful to have for a contact tracer if you do test positive for COVID-19 and people you've been in contact with need to be notified. But I think it might also be enlightening for you. It would show you how much you're actually staying at home and how much you're going out. I mean, every time you left your house, you'd sort of pause and think, is this really worth putting in my contact tracing log? How many more people is a disease detective possibly going to need to contact if I go on this outing? This is actually a practice I've been doing. Not writing it down, but anytime I want to go anywhere, thinking, is this something I'd want to tell a contact tracer? For me, this has helped a lot when I'm feeling like getting out of the house, but maybe need to remember that even though we are reopening in our region, this pandemic isn't over. And how much do I want to possibly be adding to the spread of this virus and lengthening the duration of it versus trying to be a part of limiting that spread by continuing to only go out when it's essential, making sure to follow social distancing and masking guidelines when I do, and continuing to support my community and connect with my family and my friends in creative, non-in-person ways whenever possible, which I've found I can actually do quite a lot. You're listening to special coverage on the novel coronavirus from North State Public Radio. Stay tuned. This is special coverage on the novel coronavirus from North State Public Radio. I'm Sarah Bohannon. Last week, we heard from Chico State President Gail Hutchinson after the Chico City Council voted to possibly explore bringing more students back to the university in the fall, as a significant loss in students living in the city could have a significant financial impact on it. Today, we'll hear the second half of President Hutchinson's interview, where NSPR's Andre Bayek asked not just how the pandemic could possibly affect students, but also what it means for those whose livelihoods come from the university.
The pandemic has affected the economy greatly. Across the country, millions of people are out of work. I'm wondering how the pandemic will affect Chico State. Will staff, faculty, administration take a hit financially in the form of perhaps layoffs, furloughs, or pay cuts?
Yes. When the governor presented his May revise, it became very clear that the state is facing a $54 billion deficit. And a $54 billion deficit, if you read through his May revise and even examined some of what the legislative analysts wrote about, the CSU will take a hit. The monies that were requested as new money to the CSU are for next year are simply off the table. And we do expect to see a reduction in our overall state appropriation. So as the system takes a hit, that actually trickles down to Chico State and to the other campuses. So we do expect to see a reduction in our resources for next year. And what we're engaged in right now is planning how we mitigate that reduction and preserve our high-quality education that we offer our students as they earn a prestigious degree from Chico State. And then we also are working to make sure that we work hard to keep all of our staff and faculty employed and working with us. So we're in the planning stages around that. When the May revise comes out, we're given kind of broad strokes. We won't know impact to the budget probably until July.
It sounds like there's an expectation that there will be a reduction in resources. What could that look like regarding instructors or staff?
So I don't know with regard to employment. First and foremost, we will work really hard to keep everybody employed and going. But I do see that we will have to reduce on spending in different ways. And I'm not ready to talk about what that might be. But, you know, we have a lot that we can do before we think about what happens to our staff and faculty. And we certainly, like I said, we're an academic community. We will work hard to support and keep everybody working to the best of our ability. But we'll find out come July if we see a significant reduction in our resources, then we will begin that planning. We're beginning to plan scenarios, but we will begin that planning in July in true diligence and start working with our staff and faculty to figure out our path forward.
Along the same lines regarding enrollment, does Chico State expect to see enrollment continue to decline this fall?
Yes. So right now we were estimating that we would be down a little bit. And so because of that, we pushed our enrollment intend to enroll deadline out to June 1st. We're pushing the pedal to the metal as we speak, hoping that we can get as many students as possible to enroll in Chico State, because being a wildcat is where it's at. But yes, I do expect the enrollment to be down. As to how much, I don't know, but I'll know after June 1st.
I'd like to give you the opportunity now to share anything that you'd like to add about Chico State's response to the pandemic or plans, or to clarify anything.
In terms of Chico State's response, I could not be more proud of our academic community. Our faculty, staff, and even our students have responded extremely well to this COVID-19 pandemic. And what I mean by that is when we received word back in early March that we needed to pivot our entire university into a virtual environment, faculty and staff did it in a matter of days. For us, I think the announcement came out of the chancellor's office on March 11. March 13th, Friday the 13th, was the Friday before spring break. We immediately canceled classes on that day and asked faculty to use it as a work day to begin making that transition of their courses that were in person to online and virtual. Over spring break, our students, the majority of whom left the area, we were able to keep them out of the area and remaining home and hopefully safe. And when faculty returned after spring break, they had two more workdays before all courses started up again on March 25th. So the Herculean efforts to really take an entire university and have it go virtual, hats off to the staff and faculty and students who made that happen. And in that transition, I want to give a special shout out to our technology folks, because we had a number of students who didn't have laptops or access, and we were able to provide them with laptops and hotspots to help them with their connectivity, as well as our faculty for that matter. And then the faculty and the staff, because they did it. They really made courses exciting, working hard to keep our students engaged, help them complete and finish the academic term. And for that invincible class of 2020, they helped them to the graduation stage where they could engage and complete with a virtual commencement. The other message I have is, you know, this is tough. It's tough on everyone. None of us expected a global pandemic. And this is a time where we really have to find our self's inner strength, that inner fortitude, if you will, that resilience that we know we have, and also discipline to persevere. And to the students out there, I say this, I know this is not what you wanted. It's a disappointment that we don't have everything in person, but I need you to stay engaged. It's not a time to pause your education. It's not a time to stop out. It's a time to lean in. It's a time to learn how to engage virtually, as well as ways to be safe, because your education is most important. And your education during this global pandemic and an economic downturn is especially important as you prepare, earning the skills and knowledge you need to be those solution builders and problem solvers of the solution that California desperately needs as we begin to emerge from this entire situation.
That was Chico State President Gail Hutchinson speaking with NSPR's Andre Bayek. You can hear the full interview on our website, mynspr.org. And that is your program. If you have any questions for us, call our message line at 433-9216 or head to our website, mynspr.org. Today's special coverage was produced by Mark Albert, Ken Duvall, Christian Solis, Andre Bayek, and Phil Wilkie. Our technical producer is Matt Fidler. Thank you for being with us. I'm Sarah Bohannon, news director at North State Public Radio, and this is Special Coverage. Tune in each weekday evening at 6:30, or catch the rebroadcast the following morning at 8:30. Until then, stay safe, stay informed, and consider that contact tracing log.